From VOA, the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Welcome to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Loosely defined, artificial intelligence, or AI, is a technology that allows computers to think and learn on their own so that they can perform many tasks normally done by humans. To learn, think, and perform human-like functions, AI uses technologies such as speech, facial, and even emotional recognition. You're working with forms of AI if you've used Apple's Siri or attempted a Google search, but before you finish typing in your query, the search engine seems to anticipate your question and fills in the remainder for you. Today, we're going to talk about artificial intelligence and ChatGPT, a very popular AI language processing tool that helps users have human-like conversations. My guest joining me today via Zoom is Mark Bryan. He's a senior foresight consultant at the Future Today Institute. Founded by Amy Webb in 2006, the Future Today Institute focuses on how emerging technology and science will disrupt business, transform the workplace, and ignite geopolitical change. Mark, how do you define artificial intelligence? What does this term mean to you?
I think of it as augmented intelligence. It's a system that uses computer science and data to solve problems, offer advice, augment what we do. It includes things like machine learning and deep learning, which is algorithms that look for patterns, image recognition, which can be used for identifying errors and creating standards. We're seeing it being used by structural engineers for computations to design bridges. We're seeing generative AI being used for things like new images from Midjourney to new floor plans. There's so much to it, but what I really think it means to me is that right now, technology is closer than ever to bringing us new opportunities for personalized and curated suggestions, stories, art, way of working and shopping, and ways of finding new information that technology is learning from us and it's adapting to us.
You know, what's being called AI was once a popular aspect of science fiction throughout the 20th century. And it seems like that could be said for other fields of technology that once existed in the science fiction world is now in the real world. What are your thoughts about some of the stuff that they predicted back years ago that's coming true today?
Well, I think what it shows is that the imagination and creativity of humanity actually leads to a lot of technological advancement. When you think about a lot of what people are talking about in terms of AI being able to help us predict when machines are going to break down, that's happening now. When we look at things like movies and shows like Star Trek, you know, they were talking about technology being able to scan the body and to know what's wrong with inside of the body, or using tablets to be able to control starships. And while we're not maybe necessarily using tablets to control starships, we are using them to control many other devices. And so I think the imagination of humanity really does help push us forward. Now, obviously, it takes time, it takes investment, and it takes development, which is why sometimes it's a lot slower than what people would prefer. We get very excited and caught up in the zeitgeist of things, and that can sometimes be to our detriment.
I take it that the term artificial intelligence is a broad umbrella term that covers various applications being used today.
Yes, that is true. It can cover everything like I was talking about, image recognition to being able to help with digital twins to predict when things are going to be breaking down, to natural language processors that are things like ChatGPT. So it's any algorithm that can help with decision making, with can be generative and to just, again, augment the processes that we're doing to help make some of those mathematical equations that are really complex and difficult easier and faster to be able to perform. Even when we look at sequencing DNA, being able to use AI to help us with that as well.
What fields use or have been using AI the most, and how so?
I think the, you know, when it comes to engineering and it comes to math, those are the ones that have really led the way when it comes to artificial intelligence. You know, historically, it was used for computations. And so it started with trying to make sure that we could make some large calculations faster. And then it progressed into being able to calculate flight patterns and even artillery paths when we talk about World War II. And then it really started to become more for automation and for, again, that augmentation part of it. So it started in the math and the engineering and moved into much more creative uses and application to where now it's being used for work, where it's helping to augment the way that we work and creating, again, those faster processes that reduce some of the mundane tasks that we do on a daily basis.
A term we've been hearing a lot about lately, especially in social media circles, is algorithms. What is an algorithm and how are they used in AI applications?
Algorithms are the processes that it's a logic process that says, if these things are true, then this is the potential outcome. And so typically these algorithms run the AI and they are what train AI or how AI can start to learn more data. So as we start to look to neural networks, they are learning AI. They're learning from the information that they're being trained on. And those algorithms help them to do that learning.
You know, Mark, with any new technology, there appears to be a significant unease or even fear of AI, and now especially in the future. The website Analytics Insight listed several in a web article called Top Things to Fear About Advanced Artificial Intelligence in 2023. And among them, AI will produce biased outcomes. Algorithms are made by humans, and they could add their own biases to AI.
That is true. That is very true. Unfortunately, it is the old adage, garbage in, garbage out, where the data that AI is trained on sometimes contains bias information. And we do know that sometimes these AI algorithms will have bias in the suggestions that they make. It will have bias when it makes suggestions on certain care that people of color should receive or the ways that they should be treated. And unfortunately, it's because of the data that they're trained on. The other biases that happen occur because of who makes AI. Women and people of color have often been left out, especially in the earlier works when it came to who was creating AI and defining AI. So yes, those biases occur. But what I would also say is that those biases occur in our search engines as well.
Another point is we won't be able to understand why AI behaves in certain ways, offering kind of off-the-wall answers and advice.
Yes, their AI can hallucinate, which is basically it uses the data that it's learned to come up with an answer that isn't technically true. And the reason for this is because it can't necessarily always understand context. And so sometimes it will take the disparate information that it has and put it together in a way that is not correct or factual. And so what the big talk and why I don't think we're at a true inflection point just yet when it comes to AI integration, especially with things like ChatGPT, is because we haven't been able to make sure that it uses verified data. That's where I think blockchain technology could be a tool that could help make AI much more of a trusted source and a trusted advisor and a trusted assistant by being able to verify the facts that it's being trained on, helping to correct some of those biases, as well as being able to help with the outcomes that it produces.
Okay, a big concern a lot of folks have is that it could be used as another outlet for cyber attacks, and it could be weaponized for use by rogue nations and terrorists. Is that a legitimate fear?
It is. There are many bad actors right now that are looking to use AI to perpetrate some of those crimes. They are using AI to create deepfakes that will mimic the visual and voice of local officials. We've been seeing that within the U.S. news lately. Most specifically, there was a lot of deepfakes that were just generated with former President Trump that looked like he was being arrested. So we are seeing some of those image-generated crimes occur, as well as trying to hack into our systems. And so as we're integrating AI more into some of the processes that we are doing, yes, that is something that we need to be aware of. Again, it goes back to making sure that we are cognizant of what we're using AI for and how it's created. Right now, most people are trying to jailbreak that system and make it say and do terrible things. But again, that's the distraction from what we consider at the Future Today Institute to be the real concern, which is more to do with how it's making those decisions and where is the data that it's getting from. ChatGPT is now one of the most closed off systems that exists when it comes to the data that it's using and how it's making some of its decisions. So we need to be concerned about what it can do, but also, again, what is being fed into it.
You know, it seems as though current technology seems to be a huge challenge for a lot of people. And how are they going to deal with material coming from AI applications?
There is a great swing of the term upskilling, where you're learning new information about skills that you already have to be able to interact and interface with AI. I think a lot of people talk about the younger generations being digital natives. And while that is true, I don't even think that they're ready for what we're going to see in the next 12 to 18 months with how AI is going to be integrated into our world to where it could revolutionize the internet that they are already familiar with using. So I think there's more training and tools that need to be used. A lot of people are talking about how VR training could be used for traditional education. And I think that's another tool that we could consider when it comes to learning how to prompt in AI. So a lot of times when you talk about those image generators or those generative AIs, you have to input information in order to get a response. That's called prompting. And so if we could watch how people make good prompts or ask correct questions, it kind of goes back to research, making sure that you're asking the right question. That will help people to be able to be more able to interact with AI technology.
Along with concerns about privacy, security, one of the biggest concerns I understand, and understandably so, are people afraid of losing their jobs to AI and automation. Do you see a time when that might happen?
So what I would say is that it kind of goes back to one of my original statements is about the augmentation and how I think of AI as augmented intelligence. I don't think that we're going to wholly see AI completely replace humans. What we know about AI right now is that it can't necessarily be creative. It needs the data to come from humans. It needs the prompts to come from humans in order to make the connections, in order to generate something. So what I think we will see is, again, some of those menial tasks like maybe note-taking or writing an email or creating a market proposal or creating a presentation. Those tasks might be automated through AI. But that's not saying that we're losing the worker. What it's saying is it's going to augment what the worker can do. And again, this is why education is so critical at this moment as we start to implement these tools and technologies to allow people to feel like they can have that augmentation capability versus feeling like they are left out. I think one of the things that the pandemic helped do to some of our older generations is make them more familiar with technology. And so I think that's actually going to be a boon as we move into this new integration with AI.
Mark, you were talking about education. What I've noticed, especially about advanced technology, such as AI and computer technology, is that it develops so quickly and moves so quickly that typical people can't keep up.
Yeah, that is true. But what I would also say is that there are times that it is slower. If we look at the history of AI, it started back in Greece, you know, when we talked about the way that human think and how people imagine what the mind actually means. And then we fast forward into World War II, where it started to become even more thought of and created. So yes, there are times that move fast, but think about how the evolution of phones have occurred too, where it's cell phones specifically, where it started off with basic processes of being able to make a call and then being able to add text messages to it, to video calls, to now we have smart computers in our pockets. And that adoption hasn't been that scary, but we've had the training to go along with it. So again, we need to make sure that we have parallel education as well as integration.
Mark, you know, AI in films, book, television, and other media have long been portrayed as this mysterious, malevolent entity. My first exposure to the concept of AI came from watching Stanley Kubrick's classic 1968 film, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Yep. And later it was a disturbing movie called I, Robot, starring Will Smith. How do you think films like these, showing a kind of dystopian AI future, has affected people's embrace of the technology?
I mean, I think it capitalizes on fear. Retailers do this with fear of missing out and drop culture, where they capitalize on fear in order to make people to respond. And so I do think that we need to see more and better representation in Hollywood and in film with what AI is capable for. I was just at South by Southwest and was fortunate enough to sit in to listen to a panel about this very topic. And that was their premise, that AI is usually represented as something that is evil. And it's usually a general purpose AI, which means that an AI can do multiple different things versus a singular purpose AI like ChatGPT, which function is to have a conversation versus controlling a robot and having human persona. We also over anthropomorphize AI to be like humans, versus just realizing that it's a technology that doesn't necessarily need to or will take on human shape and form. So I think that's the other part where we think it's going to be like humans and it's going to replace humans. That's not necessarily what AI is going to look like or be, especially as we think about it being integrated into our screens and into our phones and into other wearable devices. So I think the representation harms us and generates that cycle that makes people wary versus exploratory.
Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download at voanews.com/PCUSA. You can also find our show on Apple Podcasts and other podcast platforms. Be sure to connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA or Twitter at Carol_Castiel. Our email address is pcusa@voanews.com. Now, let's get back to the science edition of Press Conference USA. Today, we're talking about artificial intelligence and ChatGPT, a very popular AI language processing tool that helps users have human-like conversations. My guest joining me today via Zoom is Mark Bryan, Senior Foresight Consultant at the Future Today Institute. The Future Today Institute is a leading future forecasting firm now in its second decade. Mark, before the break, we were talking about some of the concerns people have of AI. Another worry that people have expressed of AI is about AI-powered machines eventually becoming sentient beings. With techniques like deep learning and others that help AI learn and improve itself, is it possible that someday in the future, AI entities could develop abilities to be so responsive and so intelligent that they could develop some type of consciousness?
I believe that's referred to as the singularity, where AI becomes more sentient. Currently, no, because again, it is trained off of the data that we provide, and we get to limit that data right now. So even ChatGPT is only trained on data that's up to 2021, I believe. And so what we train it on, what the data goes in, it goes back to, again, garbage in, garbage out. So we need to be cautious of what information we're putting into it and how we are creating those tools. So I am not particularly worried about that right now.
Mark, you mentioned briefly about during ancient Greek times about the early use of AI. And so let's talk a little bit about the history of AI. From what I understand, AI in the modern era was proposed back in 1935 by mathematician, logician, and computer scientist Alan Turing, who described a device that a computing machine can learn, modify, or improve its own program. What can you tell us about the late Alan Turing and his contributions to computers and artificial intelligence?
Great question, and I'm glad that we're recognizing his contribution. So Alan Turing is considered the father of computer science. His work with laying the foundation for algorithms and computation, he developed the Turing machine, which was able to read information and then write information back. Most famously, there was a movie with Benedict Cumberbatch that just came out that depicted this, where he also developed a machine that was, in essence, able to use data on tape, so pieces of paper, to recognize the potential patterns Germany was using when sending messages and able to decode them. And then he actually created the theory about AI that there could be a mechanical brain that uses computational systems for learning like a brain does. And we also have the Turing test, which tests the intelligence of a computer and now AI to see whether it can actually fool the human test giver or questioner into thinking that the AI is human or actually thinking like a human. So he laid a lot of the groundwork. What I would say is that one of the biggest contributions that he did beyond all of that is that his Turing machine was able to actually store data in the machine. Whereas before, it was thought that data and the machine had to be separate. So integrating to them together was the first step into that, the computers that we know today.
Another important event regarding the development of AI took place in the summer of 1956. It was a 6 to 8 week long Dartmouth summer research project on artificial intelligence. What can you tell us about that and its importance to the development of AI?
Yeah, so really, this is where the term artificial intelligence really came to life, and it really galvanized the 1960s for thinking about what AI could do. It was put on by several researchers who were starting to look at what they could do to define AI using Turing's work and several other predecessors. They brought in other engineers and social scientists to really think about the ramifications about what it would mean for a machine to be able to think and to learn and to act like humans and to be able to process like humans. What I would say is this is the first part where we actually see bias occur because the people that were in the room were white men. There were many women who were already in this field that were not included, as well as people of color. And so this is kind of the starting point for where AI bias occurs, in my opinion. But again, it really helped us to think through about what it could mean for AI playing games, for being able to talk back to us, to be able to have the growth spurts that enabled the things like ChatGPT and Midjourney to become a reality, to become self-teaching. You know, it started the pathway down for neural networks to be even more further explored. So it laid a lot of the groundwork, but it also started some of the harm, too.
Do you think there's a need for the development of a set of ethics that controls AI? In other words, certain standards must be met and not be violated?
Well, there's Asimov's laws, which talk about what robots are supposed to do and not do in terms of harming humans and harming themselves and protecting humans, et cetera. I think it would be good for us to have those, at least for, you know, the guidelines when we think about, again, those bad actors and what kind of laws we want to hold them up to, what kind of humanity measurements we want to hold them up to. I think it would be good for us to think about, again, what we're programming into these AI systems and what the goal is for us to want them to do versus just allowing any kind of reaction to occur. I don't want to control it, but you know, there are more open source code that's being provided for people to develop their own AI spinoffs. And it would just be good, I think, as humans to be able to say that this is the standard that we will hold ourselves up to as we're developing these technologies.
Mark, we are having a problem worldwide with misinformation. And back in January, it was reported that the tech site CNET began to quietly publish feature articles that were written entirely by AI. And evidently, this material published by CNET was full of errors and plagiarism, and the company was forced to issue corrections to these AI-produced stories. And CNET later said that their use of AI was only an experiment. And then Microsoft replaced human journalists with AI bots to produce homepage content for their MSN website and their Edge browser. And finally, I just read this yesterday, the Writers Guild of America is considering letting AI write Hollywood scripts as long as humans are allowed to retain credits. Your thoughts?
Well, it's been going on for a lot longer than that. I mean, even the Associated Press has been using AI to automate some of its stories. What I would say is that the stories that have originally been looked at when it comes to automating are things like financial reporting and even just some sports news. So from what I understand from journalists, and I can't speak for all journalists, but it's some of the news stories that people want to be able to give up because they're a little bit more mundane and they want to be able to do more of that investigative journalism that would using these technology tools would allow them to do. And so I think, you know, when we think about scripts and movies, yes, there are possibilities that AI could generate movie scripts, be able to direct films, etc. But again, I think this is where creativity comes into play, where we figure out, okay, what are the best options? AI can automate these stories for us, and then we can select which ones are the best options that might land best with the demographics that we know. It can hyper-personalize the reporting to a way that creates more conversational-like news reporting to the individual. It allows for maybe there are different movies endings in different geographic regions. So I think there's opportunities for creativity as long as we build human and AI together. So I think, you know, in the future, there are many possibilities that could be for benefit or harm with this technology. Again, it can be used to augment us, to make helpful choices, cut through the noise, if we design it responsibly. If we don't, it can become oppressive and tell us the wrong things that we need to do and use our data for misaligned purposes.
Okay, Mark, before we completely run out of time here, I want to talk about something that has been generating a lot of internet buzz. And that, of course, you've been mentioning it, ChatGPT. What is ChatGPT? How does it work? How is it accessed? And why do you think it's stirring up so much excitement?
ChatGPT is an AI that is trained on what is known as large language models, so trained on lots of data, so billions of data points. It's a natural language processor, so it uses the data to be able to know how to have a conversation. So that's the chat part. The GPT is the general pre-trained transformer, which is how it creates its responses. In essence, it was the most powerful generative AI that was released and relatable and usable when it was first released. We're now in ChatGPT-4. We know that OpenAI developed this, which originally OpenAI started off as a nonprofit research group for the good of humanity. And now they are using it to be integrated into other search platforms to help create more natural search processes. Google just released Bard, which aims to do the same thing. And so again, that's why we're at this almost inflection point where people are really interested in being able to gain time back in their day. When it comes to the workplace, we know that a lot of people are dissatisfied with their work because of all the tasks they have to do. And I've said this a couple times where we want to be able to replace the mundane tasks. And I think that's why they're really intrigued by this new tool that would allow them to be able to do so, because you could train ChatGPT by putting in a bunch of notes and say, synthesize these notes for me. And it would be able to do that. You could say, hey, I need to make a cold call to this company. Could you help me draft an email? Could you help me draft a marketing plan? And it can help you do that. So I think there's a lot of work ramifications that people are really intrigued by that would help, again, augment their work processes, give them some time back in their day to be more creative. And so I think that's why a lot of people are really hot on ChatGPT right now. They want that better work-life balance. And so that's why this technology is appealing to them.
Can everyday people access and use ChatGPT? And how so? How is it accessed?
Yeah, it's online. You can just go to OpenAI and their website, and they will take you directly to ChatGPT. I believe that you have to have a login just by providing them an email, and then it'll take you to the chat prompt, which just looks like a general chat bot, and you can just start typing in your questions. And this is where people can really start to experiment with learning how to ask good questions, how to ask right questions that would allow them to be more familiar with this technology. Again, people are also trying to break it. We'll respond with answers, but again, this is where we need to be humans and we need to be responsible. Where, as I understand it, it is getting much better about what you're able to input to it to provide good responses. So it's being responsible depending on who it might be we're talking to, whether it's a person of underage, et cetera. It can now accept images. So you could put images in and ask it to tell you something about the images. But again, we need to be able to verify it. So I believe the last time I saw it, I think it was only at like 58% accuracy. So the way I think about ChatGPT right now is it's a generative starting point for helping to come up with new ideas. If you're at a roadblock, I think writers could use it to start to say, okay, I'm thinking about X or Y. How could I get to Z? And it would give you some ideas of where to start.
And we mentioned this earlier about the trepidation on people's embrace of AI in general. Speaking of ChatGPT, is it safe? And if so, is there anything users should keep in mind to be safe while using it?
In general, I believe that the latest release is to help with some of more of the safety concerns that were out there, because these AI models can hallucinate and come up with things that are not factually correct and offer bad advice. And so, again, I would use it right now as a tool to familiarize yourself with what's coming. But I would also make sure that if you're going to ask it about medical advice, I still think you should talk to your doctor about that. If you're going to ask it about things about safety and regulation, make sure you're using multiple sources. Again, this goes back to kind of like basic research principles that you're not sole sourcing all of your answers. This is why misinformation and the act of disinformation is so powerful. It's because people will choose to one source versus going to multiple sources to get outside perspectives. And again, so I think this is a great starting point, but we need to be responsible with making sure that we're backing up with checking it ourselves.
I guess we should talk a little bit about privacy and security issues on ChatGPT. Can users count on a modicum of confidentiality and security away from corporate, government, and possibly hostile entities? Could the information being used from ChatGPT, can it be leaked into the internet?
The honest answer is I don't know. And a lot of that is because some of that is not transparent as far as I've been able to see with things like ChatGPT. We don't necessarily know what all of the data that goes into it is being used for. We don't know who's actually then taking the data and training ChatGPT and what the data is that they're using to be trained on. So there are privacy concerns. I think, you know, there's some Supreme Court cases that are coming right now that might impact things like ChatGPT, like social media platforms like TikTok, on who is responsible for what is posted, what is said, and what is shared in terms of, you know, what it suggests. So I think we're at the forefront of this. I don't think that we have the rules and guidelines in place, but I think that it's going to be coming hopefully fairly quickly.
Okay, Mark, final question, and it's a biggie. I'd like to get your take on what the late, great Stephen Hawking had to say about AI in a 2014 interview with the BBC. He said that, but I think the full development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. Once humans develop artificial intelligence, it would take off on its own and redesign itself at an ever-increasing rate. Humans, who are limited by slow biological evolution, couldn't compete and would be superseded. Your thoughts?
I think it goes back to a couple of things that we've talked about earlier, where I think that plays into that fear-based model, where there are lots of possibilities, but it's how we train the models. It's the data that we allow it to have. That's in essence saying that humans can't be creative enough to solve for the problems that we create ourselves. So I don't want to discount what Stephen Hawking said, but I do think that there is opportunity spaces for us to be able to not allow that to occur.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your insights into AI and ChatGPT. You've made it a lot less scary.
Rick, I am glad, and thank you for having me on.
That was Mark Bryan, Senior Foresight Consultant at the Future Today Institute. He joined us today via Zoom. And that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. Thanks for listening. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.